Welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome to the Think Orange podcast.
A podcast with ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation.
Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 32 of the Think Orange podcast. My name is Kevin Jennings. I'm the producer of the podcast. And this week, Thanksgiving week, I have the pleasure of standing in for my good friends, Dave and Ashley, as they are doing what I hope you are doing or in the process of doing, and that is winding down for an opportunity to recharge, connect with your family and friends over a fantastic meal, and reflect on all of the things that you are grateful for thus far this year. So maybe I'm joining you right now as you are making your way to grandma's house on the road trip, or as you're cleaning the house up and preparing for a house full of guests. Either way, we hope that we can pour into you, the entire Think Orange podcast team. We hope we can kind of pour into you during this time period and maybe give some food for thought as well. So it'll go along with the food that will go into your bellies. But with that being said, this podcast episode is going to be really exciting for you. It's going to be about how we can mobilize volunteers, students, and resources in a transformational way. Now, the key word is transformational. Right. At the end of the day, you work really hard. You put in long hours, sweat, blood, tears. No matter what role you're in, whether you're on staff or you're a volunteer, your effort is at 110%. And wouldn't it be a shame to do all that and not see it be effective? For it to just be another task that you complete, for it to be another box you check or a line item you scratch through. That's not why you got into this. You got into this to make an impact and to make a difference. And so let's make sure we do things in a transformational way. There's a life on the other end of this work that is changed because of how hard we're working and because of us allowing God to use us each and every week. So that's the goal of this episode, to give you what you need to start doing that and doing that well if you're not doing it today. And maybe there's something you are doing well, but we want to remind you of why that thing is working the way it is. To do that, we have two awesome folks on the podcast with us today. One is James Ward. James is the Director of International Programs at the 410 Bridge, a missions organization that partners churches with communities in Kenya and Haiti. So James oversees the development and implementation of projects and programs that foster sustainable transformation in dozens of communities around the globe. But James is also a former youth pastor and camp director. And so he has a big heart for how churches are using missions and outreach both globally and locally with students and with the next generation. We're also going to hear from a person who's no stranger to this podcast, Tom Sheffunis. Tom has appeared on episode 5 of the podcast, where we discussed how you can impact a child's life forever. And then we also had him on episode 26, where we talked about clarifying the win for small group leaders. So for those who don't know Tom, better known as Chef, is the Director of Student Strategy at Orange. So that is everything we do with middle school and high school, runs through the awesome leadership of Tom Sheffunis. Tom has a passion for helping campus directors and their teams. He is a guy who loves leading and helping other leaders. And I've seen that firsthand with how he's been a great advocate and supporter of me as a human being as well. He's a former principal. Most recently, he served at North Point Ministries as the multi-campus director of middle school transit. And when I say recently, I mean recently. I mean, back at episode 5 of this podcast, he was at North Point. By episode 26, he was full-time overall here on the Orange team. But Tom is also the co-author of Lead Small, which is kind of the definitive guide that we've developed here at Orange when it comes to helping small group leaders understand what they do every week in the lives of the next generation. And so if you have never read that book, I highly recommend it. People love it, and I think you would love it as well. Well, for those of you who are new here, I want to give you a quick rundown of what this podcast is all about and what it can do for you. Every week, we try to give you ideas and conversations that will help you influence the next generation. And what that means is we will go through our vault of content and great ideas from communicators and leaders all over the world that we've had at our Orange Conference event, that we've had at our Orange Tour series, that we have had at our Rethink Leadership event, now our upcoming events called Youth Ministry Leadership Exchange, where we have student leaders and youth workers coming together. We have Live to Serve, which brings volunteers together to talk about different unique angles and topics that are special to them. And then we're pulling excerpts from that. We're pulling clips from that saying, this is something that's so powerful. What would it do if leaders everywhere heard this idea and got a piece of this concept? And then we sit down with the leader and we unpack that topic, unpack that idea, give it some more context so we can make sure it's really actionable for you so that you feel like you can lead better tomorrow than you led today, or lead better today than you did yesterday. And that's what it's all about for us. And so that's what you can come to expect from this podcast. So if you've enjoyed this podcast, it means you're likely going to enjoy one of our events. And today's podcast is brought to you by the Orange Conference 2018. That's right, 2018 is almost here, and we are already talking about Orange Conference that's going to happen next spring. But I want to make you aware of a special offer you can get now. So the Orange Conference is a 3-day conference in Atlanta, Georgia for your entire family ministry team. And this year we're going to be discovering how we can work better together to do more for the next generation with our theme of becoming one voice. And if you register by December 14th this year, 2017, you will save $70 on your ticket and get bonus content from this year's Orange Tour that just wrapped up a couple of weeks ago. So you can learn more about the event, you can register, you can read about the speakers who are going to be there and the theme, all at theorangeconference.com. That's theorangeconference.com. Now, I want to just highlight why this is important. The full price ticket is $349. And right now, you can get it for $279. That's pretty dramatic on the discount. So I'm sure if you and your team are considering coming, now is the time to buy to make sure you can have the least amount of impact on your budget. And I know that matters. So we'd love to see you here in Atlanta next year. So go to theorangeconference.com. Well, without further ado, I don't want to hold us any longer. Let's jump right in to this episode by hearing from Mr. James Ward.
As was mentioned earlier, I come out of the church world. I served as a youth pastor for years, and as most of you who work in church world ministry know, that if you're a youth pastor, that means that your primary responsibility is to work with youth pastors, but generally you've got some other responsibilities that just kind of fall under this broad umbrella. And one of my other responsibilities was missions. And so I spent several years kind of cutting my teeth on what it looked like to do missions with youth. And I got to be honest with you, I didn't have a huge heart for missions when I started in youth ministry. I made a lot of mistakes, did a lot of stuff now that I look back on and say, what was I thinking? But I learned a lot through the process. And so I'm going to start off just telling you a bit about one of the trips that we did early on in my youth ministry. I'm going to kind of use that as a case study as we walk through this content to help draw some parallels. And my guess is that the illustration that I give you is going to sound familiar to you. And on the surface, I just want to prepare you for this, on the surface, it doesn't seem that bad. But over the last several years, as I've really worked in community development, if I've really worked in the missions world, I've got an opportunity to kind of peek behind the curtain and to see what happens when we leave. And it's totally changed the way I view missions. And I think we as a church really need to rethink in a lot of ways the way we're engaging locally and globally. So as I use missions over the course of this talk, you could take that word out, you could replace it with outreach if you wanted to. Just know that when I say missions, what I'm saying, 90% of the time will apply both locally and globally. Does that make sense? All right, so I'm a youth pastor. The students, it's a mid-sized church, probably 500 to 800 people, depending on the week in the church. We have a student ministry of 60, 80 kids, depending on the week. And I've got students, and senior pastor comes to me, I've been on the job maybe a couple months, comes to me and says, hey, by the way, we do an annual mission trip with the youth. And we need to start thinking about that. Need to start planning that. So I kind of, well, what have we done in the past? Well, we went to Ukraine last year. We did Guatemala the year before that. You may want to talk to our Hispanic pastor, Pablo. He knows somebody in Ecuador, and that may be a good opportunity for you this year. So I go and I talk to Pablo, and I find out that he knows of a community, a place in Ecuador, where there's a Christian school that's under-resourced. The kids that go to the school, some of them don't have nice clothes, some of them don't wear shoes. If you can imagine the humanity, they don't even have a playground, right? They don't even have a playground. And so I think, man, that's a need. So we're going to mobilize our students to go and meet that need. So get the students together. We've got a group of students, some adults, people are excited. And we do what most of us do when we start planning a mission trip. We prepare for the trip. We send out emails to the church, say, hey, we're going on a mission trip. Bring your old clothes, bring your old shoes, bring your stuff that you don't really have a place for in your closet anymore. We're gonna pack it up in second bags, and we're gonna haul a couple tons of this stuff with us on the trip. So we do that, we gather stuff, we've got all sorts of stuff, put it in packages. We've got little pieces of paper in the package that says something cool like, this stuff brought to you by grace, through grace, from Grace Community Church, or something like that in it, right? Something cheesy. And we've got this stuff, and we load up, we get on a plane, there's like 22 of us. We fly to Ecuador, we land, we go into the school, we start handing stuff out, we travel to other neighborhoods, other areas around the community, we're handing stuff out, people are coming, they're excited to see us. We go to the school, we work on a playground, because kids gotta have a playground, they just got to. And then after, 10 days, we pack our stuff up, we're a lot lighter on the way out because we left all sorts of stuff behind, pack up, get on the plane, and we fly home. And we're feeling pretty good about ourselves. We're feeling like, man, that was an awesome trip. We brought all the students home that we left with. We were able to give a lot of stuff away. Nobody got deathly ill. Some people had a little bit of the Ecuadorian sensation, but nothing too bad. And that's a good trip. Chalk it up. It's time to start thinking about next year. What are we gonna do next year? Well, we kind of did the Ecuador thing. We start talking about where else we should go. And that cycle kind of defined our missions, even if I could apply that same thing locally to what we were doing locally, kind of defined our missions. And after a couple years of that, I just was left wanting. I just started looking back and saying, wait a second, there's got to be more. There's got to be something we're missing. There's got to be more to it than this. Because if I'm honest with myself, my students are having a great experience. And they're making some great memories. But I don't know that they're being transformed. I don't know that their world is really changing because of this self. Because of these trips. And if I'm honest with myself, I have no clue if we're making any significant long-term impact in the places that we're going. See, we were clear on our mission. Our mission was to go and make disciples, right? We all know that. It's the Great Commission. We knew our mission. But what I realized as I really started to evaluate is we don't have a clue about our strategy. A couple years ago, I was here at Orange, and I was doing a talk, and right as I was walking in, I was kind of walking, breezing through the store, had a few minutes to spare, and I look over, and they've got these cool coasters. Have you guys seen these things? They're like stone coasters. And I've never been so inspired by a coaster before, but they've got messages and they're pretty good. And so I was looking at it and one of the coasters just, for whatever reason, caught my eye. And it said this, it said, it's your strategy, not just your mission, that ultimately determines your success. And I just think that is so true. as the church, when it comes to missions, when it comes to outreach, for the most part, we know the mission, or at least we think we know the mission. But I think if we're honest with ourselves, most churches, most ministries, most organizations really don't have a strategy for how to go accomplish that mission. And so today, I want to spend the next few minutes talking to you about what we've learned as an organization over the last 6+ years. As we've mobilized people, we've kind of uncovered a strategy that we've seen work. We've seen transformational change happen in the communities that we serve in and in the lives of the people that go serve and the churches that send them. And so I want to talk to you a little bit about that. And to help in this, I brought some help and some props. I hope you guys are able to see these in the back. This little guy right here, this represents us. Okay, now I get it doesn't look exactly like us, but this for the sake of our conversation today, this is us. Okay, and I'm going to use us up here to just draw some parallels and help connect some dots around the strategy that we believe in, that we think is transformational as we engage with others. And so I've got some props that I'm going to put on top of us up here. You've got these in your notes, if you got notes when you came in. And so you can kind of follow along if you want. And really what this is just the process that most of us go through, churches go through, individuals go through, as we begin to engage outside of the walls of the church. So the first thing that happens, more times than not, is that we become aware of a specific issue or crisis. Something gets our attention. For me, it was hearing that there's this school, there's this place in Ecuador where kids don't have shoes and their clothes are old and tethered, and there's no place for them to play. I became aware of it. I didn't know about that before. I became aware of that. For some of you, it's you become aware of an injustice in your community. You become aware of somebody's struggles, somebody's pain, problems that exist in your community or globally. And when you become aware of it, because we're believers, because we have the Holy Spirit within us, something happens, our heart is tugged, and we feel compassion. Our hearts connect with the issue that we've been made aware of. Now, this isn't new information, right? You guys know this. We've all experienced this at some level, whether it's driving down the road and there's a guy on the side of the road holding a sign that says, "We'll work for food." We become aware of a need. We feel compassion. That's not right, that poor guy. And we feel called to do something. So the next logical step is to take some action. We begin to leverage our time and our resources to address the need or the issue that we've been made aware of. For most churches that I've interacted with, I'm not painting a broad brush here, but most of the churches I've interacted with and worked with, when we start out, this is their strategy. Become aware of a need. Does it appeal to the hearts of our people? It does. We want to do something about it. We mobilize money and resources, time, mobilize people. We go address that need. And then we go look for another need. And we do that cycle all over again. And when we do that, when we work that way, we feel pretty good about ourselves. We're meeting needs. We're addressing issues. We're doing good work. But there's a problem with this. And it's a big, big problem. The problem with this is many times if we're honest with ourselves, we have no idea whether the time and the money that we're leveraging is actually making any kind of long-term transformational change. And there's a problem with this because this isn't discipleship. This isn't our mission. This is good. This should be done. But if this is the extent of the way we engage locally and globally, we may be doing more harm than good. There's a book out by a guy named Bob Lupton called Toxic Charity. It's a great, great read. And one of the things he talks about in that book is this cycle that we get in. And that when we get in a cycle of where compassion and action, where we emotionally respond to needs that we see, and all we're doing is compassion, action, moving to the next thing, moving to the next thing, that many times we do more harm than good. Because the true need that exists here, we absolutely miss. Because it just may be that the real problem with the guy standing on the side of the road with the sign that says, "We'll work for food," isn't that he needs a job, or isn't that he needs food. The real issue is probably way deeper than that. And that by giving him, and I'm not suggesting you don't give him money, that's between you and God, and you guys work that out. I'm just suggesting that there's a bigger issue at play. And if we don't engage in a more deep way, really what we serve to do is to create dependence in the people that we're serving. We affirm their broken, their wrong thinking about themselves and about the position that God has them in, or they believe God has them in. We affirm that wrong thinking, and we leave them convinced that I'm poor, I have no shoes. The way I get shoes is for somebody to come give them to me. People believe that. And we've created that belief in them because we've done it time and time again. Because what we communicate when we do that is, hey man, I know you're suffering, I know you're in need, and I know you can't do anything about it. So allow me to come in and fix you. And it's well-intentioned. We don't mean to do harm. But I think many times if we're honest with ourselves, this becomes more about how it makes us feel than about what good we're truly doing in the lives of the people that we're serving. And so this happens by default. This to me is just the default non-strategy strategy. It just happens. And what I want to suggest and what I want to challenge us with today is that we move beyond this. Because I think this is a good start. I don't think there's anything wrong with this as a start. But if this is our cycle, it creates problems. And so what if we were able to move beyond this? What if we were able to do what we've been hearing about and talking about the last couple of days, and we'll continue to hear about and talk about the rest of today and tomorrow? What if we focused? What if we moved beyond this? And what if we went deep? And what if we really worked to build a relationship with the person, the people, or the community that we're intending to serve? What difference would that make? See, now, this is tricky, because if we're going to move beyond this and we're really going to build a relationship, and I'm not just talking about getting to know a name, I'm not just talking about recognizing the person, hey man, how's it going? I mean, really building a relationship. This requires more time, more energy. This requires sacrifice on our part. This requires that we sit down across the table from somebody and we listen to them. Requires that we ask questions. Requires that we allow them to tell us what they need. We allow them to tell us what the solutions are. The way we say it is we allow them to pull us into their agenda rather than us pushing our agenda onto them. We begin to really connect with the people that we serve. Now, I get this sounds so obvious. It's shockingly obvious. I'm not telling you anything that's groundbreaking here. But rarely does this actually happen. So if we push through the relationship, we trust them with some resources, we continue to leverage time and energy, and we truly create a sense of community where we're sharing life together. We're sharing truth together. We're learning from them. They're learning from us. Something incredible begins to happen in that process. And we call it a changed worldview. This is so important. Both parties develop a biblical perspective of God, themselves, and others. Sounds fairly foundational, but early on in our organization, we stumbled across this, and at the time we heard it, it just kind of went right over our heads, and we just moved on. But it's something that God's continued to bring back in front of us, is this idea and the importance of engaging people and helping them establish a biblical worldview. We were sitting at a dinner meeting with several different leaders of different NGOs that are working in Kenya. And there was a gentleman that kind of hosting the meeting, brilliant guy. He's Kenyan. He leads one of the larger NGOs. If I said the name, everybody would know it. One of the larger NGOs around. It's really not an NGO. It's a ministry. And he's sitting at the table with us. He actually sits on our board in Kenya. And so we're just kind of grilling him with questions. And somebody asks a question, which is a question that most of us in this room have asked, and says, hey, you know, over the last like couple decades, there's been billions of dollars worth of aid. Churches in the U.S. have sent hundreds of thousands of people on short-term trips. And yet, the stuff we saw today when we were going through Kibera Slum, the stuff we saw today when we were out in the communities, well, why is that still here? Why isn't anything changing? And his answer was brilliant. He said this. He said because you think Africa has a resource problem. He looked at me, looked at us square in the eye, said, Africa doesn't have a resource problem. What we have is a worldview problem. The way our people see God, the way they see themselves, what they believe about why they're here, what their purpose is, and where they're going is broken. And all the money in the world won't solve a worldview problem. It takes what? It takes relationship. It takes getting your hands dirty, getting in the trenches, wading through the mess, and building a relationship. And if we're honest with ourselves here, we've got some significant worldview problems too. And when you sit across from somebody that's truly dependent on God, when you sit across from somebody that truly knows what it means to be persecuted for the name of Christ, your worldview begins to change. You begin to think differently about why you're here and what your purpose may be. And that's an incredible exchange. That is a transformational encounter. And we don't get there if we stop here. We may change a worldview. We may affirm a negative worldview. But we're not going to push through to a true worldview, a biblical worldview. As we continue this process, we act differently if we know this is the goal, don't we? We engage differently if we know that this is the goal. And so that if we continue to engage in that way, if we continue to hit the mess head on, then something natural happens. Maybe it's supernatural. We begin to act differently. Life transformation happens. The way that the people we serve, and this is true for us too, I just don't have enough icons, but the way that we think about things changes. The way that we engage in our local community changes. The way that we serve changes because of our worldview. The role of the local church in the community changes. All of a sudden, people are mobilized. They're serving one another. The church becomes relevant because it's not just a place that women and children go on a Sunday morning. It's a catalyst for change in the community. People see the body of Christ functioning as the body of Christ was meant to function. Lives are transformed. We act differently. We behave differently. We engage differently. Families that are united around, that have a mission, that have a common cause, dinner time conversation begins to change. They're sponsoring kids in the same community that they'll go and serve in. They're engaged. They're excited about it. And mom's involved and dad's involved. And they get to see each other serve in the unique giftings that God has given them. And then finally, local and global communities redeemed through a biblical worldview. Poverty, spiritual, physical, is a result of broken relationships. Broken relationships with God, with creation, with each other. And broken relationships need to be redeemed. And Christ is the Redeemer. And so as we engage this way, we see transformation. We see communities change. And that is the mission. That's what God has called us to.
Well, I am lucky enough to be sitting across the table from a good friend of mine, Tom Chef Shunas. Welcome to the Think Orange Bunker.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for having me. We are in a bunker.
Yes, this is our mobile bunker. It's like that thing. Have you seen the Avengers, the Ultron one, where they put Hulk in that thing? That's what this looks like.
Oh, you're right.
I have seen that one. It's the Hulkbuster container. So welcome to the Think Orange Hulkbuster container, Chef.
Thanks.
Hey, Chef, I want to talk to you about what service means in a student ministry context. And specifically, I mean, I just want to start there. How do you define service when it comes to student ministry?
Oh gosh, I've been thinking a lot about this recently. I think the research is bearing out that mobilizing students is one of the things that we've got to do. We've got to get kids to quit coming to church and to be the church if they're going to stick. If you've read Growing Young or Sticky Faith, those sorts of things with Kara and Fuller Youth Institute, it's just an important part of it. How do we engage them in service? So I think for most of us, when we think about service, we think about nonprofits or we think about mission trips.
Yeah, totally.
And I think those are important, but I think there's more to it than that.
Yeah.
And we really need to see service as discipleship at the end of the day. And it is.
Mm.
I mean, that's how your heart changes, right? Yeah. So the good news is kids want to go on mission trips. The bad news is we don't see that mission trips, or short-term mission trips at least, are really having a lasting impact. In fact, that's some of the research that Kara did coming out of Growing Young was that as much as kids want to go on mission trips, and I feel like mission trips are really important, we've got to think about ways to extend the experience beyond the week away.
I like that, especially how it ties into what you said about it's like discipleship, right? Because often in church world, we think, well, I did a 4-week discipleship class, so they're good now.
Right.
But discipleship is an ongoing thing. And what I hear you saying is service is an ongoing thing as well.
It is. And I would say service is discipleship, not just like discipleship.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that's where heart change happens. And so we as leaders need to think seriously about how do we mobilize a kid's faith? How do we set them loose and let them be a part of the body of Christ? That's what they're created to do.
Mm.
And so when you help a kid experience what they're created to do, something comes alive in them.
Yeah.
And I think that's their faith. And so that's what we're going for in discipleship, right?
Yeah. How young is too young to start this idea of mobilizing students?
I don't think you can be too young. I mean, you know, for our family, I think these are my opinions. So the way I look at it, the way we run in our family is we do family mission trips, and that's the primary way that my youngest kids feel some of that service. We do something called Lighthouse Retreat where we serve families with pediatric cancer.
Yep.
And, you know, my youngest serves drinks. That's his favorite thing to do is serve drinks at this thing.
Yeah.
For the meals. But the one thing we do try to do is continue to follow the stories of these folks beyond the week, where we're trying to give them a great week of rest and respite away from.
And how old is your youngest?
So he's 8 now, but we've been going, this was our 3rd year.
Wow.
So,
So since he was age 5, he's been in this.
They think it's
vacation.
They love it. They love it. In middle school, I love to do like a parent-child trip so they can experience service together.
Yeah.
And they see each other in different ways. One of the things I came out of a ministry, we went to Mexico, and I remember standing there with a dad who was watching his 13-year-old daughter on a concrete roof 13 feet up running a jackhammer.
Oh, really?
And he turned to me and he said, I so underestimate her at home. Like, you know, I go pick up her dishes and there she's running a jackhammer like on concrete. So that was a really cool thing. And then I think, you know, the older they get, we can move into mission trips and further. But once they get to high school, we need to start really thinking about weekly service. Yeah. We need to start thinking differently about what service is and look beyond the mission trip and beyond, you know, working with a nonprofit. Although it could be a weekly nonprofit experience, yeah. I think.
So what are some ideas that you have if you were sitting across or if you were sitting in front of a hundred student leaders,
yeah.
What are some practical things that you would be telling them to do that would look weekly?
Well, I think I'd go back and say, I don't want to just give them ideas. I want to go back and think about like, hey, think about real service. How do you define service?
Yeah.
Is a really important question you need to spend some time on.
Mm.
What are the elements of a quality service opportunity for a student? And I woke up actually last night and I had five things on my mind. I wrote them down.
This is in the middle of the night.
This is just
what you think about.
This is
why we love you, Chef, and this is why people get so much out of what you share.
Gosh, I have learned to get up and write that stuff down because if I don't, I just sit and stay up and just think about it.
That's good.
And then I wake up. Sometimes I wake up and don't remember it, and there's just this note on my whiteboard in my office, which is right off of my...
So this is Chef's five middle of the night ideas.
Yeah. Well, before that, I even want to say this. So if you are a youth pastor, here's what we need to understand when we're giving somebody a true service opportunity. When you're giving someone a true service opportunity, you're probably giving them something you feel is important.
Mm-hmm.
So the proper facial expression when you truly give something away is everybody clench their teeth and just be like, oh, like the last time you really messed up and thought about it, went, oh, that's your appropriate facial response, because it should be this: you're giving something away, you're open-handed, and you're giving somebody something that's really important to do, and you're worried that they're not going to do it as well as you or not going to do it like you.
Mm.
And I think at some point we all have to realize we are part of the body of Christ, not the body of Christ.
Mm.
And we serve a God who's big enough to use a 13-year-old kid, maybe even better than you could have done it.
Yeah.
Maybe different, or maybe in a way that you just don't even understand yet, because you're not looking at, you know, the world through the way God sees the world.
Yeah.
And so we've got to utilize the body of Christ. We've got to help kids feel, you know, that. And so the way I like to describe that is, do you remember Jurassic Park?
Totally.
It's such a great scene.
Yeah.
When they land on the island and they see the dinosaurs for the first time. And of course, it's leading up to that big moment where they're standing at the glass looking out on the T-Rex paddock.
Yeah.
Right? And you're waiting for the T-Rex to come out and eat, and then they go and feed.
This is where the goat's tied up, right?
Well, that's the whole scene. We want to give our kids these tied up goats because we want it. But do you remember what Malcolm said when he watched Malcolm the Mathematician? Do you remember that whole scene?
Yeah. I can't remember what he says.
He's leaning against the glass and he sees the goat tied up and he's like, oh, no. T-Rex wants to hunt. T-Rex, because T-Rex was created to hunt.
Yeah.
So when we give kids like, here's what you do in this situation, A, B, C, and D, when we give that, we're giving them these tied up, like they need to solve problems. They need to learn to lead. And if we're truly going to help kids help develop leaders, we've got to take some chances. We've got to open up our hands and say, you know what? That's a really important part. On the other hand, we can't just let T-Rex out the back door to go hunt. Because that'll be a mess. Because you know, so these young, we also need to give them a paddock, but it's got to be big enough, and we've got to figure out ways to allow them to experience true leadership without wrecking your ministry. So that's the appropriate tension to feel. You should feel that tension.
Say
if
that
you're
again,
not feeling them, that tension.
Say that again. That? Give them true leadership without wrecking your ministry.
Yeah, that's right.
That's awesome.
So that's the whole T-Rex wants to hunt. So here are the five things that came up in the middle of the night. You ready for them?
I'm ready.
I don't know if they're any good. So it's got to be important.
Yep.
Reggie's famous for saying, if you want someone to feel important, you give them something important to do.
Mm.
It doesn't mean that every kid gets to preach,
because
that's important. But it really matters how you talk about it. For instance, are donuts important? Well, if I'm an ex-middle school pastor, if we ran out of donuts, I can tell you donuts are very important. But if you put 20 kids in charge of serving 30 kids donuts, it's not going to feel important because it's not. If you give the one kid with a driver's license and tell him, hey, bro, I need you at the donut shop at 7:35. Mm. And if you're not at the donut shop at 7:35, meaning you can be back here at 8, my ministry, the whole thing's dead. Like this is dead in the water. So I know, you know, the other way I like to help people describe it is, Every volunteer you have in your ministry should lay in bed Sunday morning on that perfect Sunday morning when the temperature's just right, the rain's hitting the roof just right, and everything in you wants to roll over and go to sleep. There needs to be something in you that says, if I don't go, someone's going to miss something.
Mm.
So how do you make every job in your ministry, and it's possible if you think about it, in the way you cast a vision, how do you make every job in your ministry that important and talk about it so that they feel that it's important?
That's good.
I think another element is it has to be dependent on them. And I kind of just said that, but somebody's going to miss something if they don't show up. You have to celebrate it. It's got to be a celebrated thing. We celebrate service all the time. And when we see great service, we celebrate what we want repeated.
Mm-hmm.
If you get a letter from a parent about an awesome volunteer, you should read it out loud to the whole crowd.
Mm.
The Power of Habit and Charles Duhigg actually talks about this idea that when you celebrate, I'm trying to remember the context of it, but the point I got from that whole conversation or that whole reading was when you read a letter about a volunteer,
mm-hmm.
every volunteer feels mm-hmm. valued.
Yeah.
They kind of put themselves in that yeah. spot. So you celebrate, it's a celebrated position. Accountability, you should fire leaders that don't come through. And this is a really hard thing, and this is a really different thought, but the reality is when you draw a line and say you're not doing a good enough job, the people who are doing a great job take notice.
Mm.
And that goes back to a good to great concept, is when you raise the bar,
yeah.
People respond. And so you should be, I mean, you've been given the stewardship to lead the ministry. And if kids are missing out because you have a bad volunteer, who else is going to worry about it? You know, so you've got to step in and do the hard stuff sometimes.
Yeah.
And I think that matters. And then cultural, it's got to be important. We got to talk about it all the time. It's just got to be part of the culture. One of my favorite things when I left North Point that I would hear is when an eighth grader left our ministry to go to high school, they would say, I'm coming back in 10th grade. And then they would say, to get my boys or to get my girls.
Mm.
So there was this cultural feeling of, hey, this was incredible. I had a great time. I can't wait to come back and be a leader in it. And so yeah. that's a cultural change. So that's if you good. Can get that it's important, that it's dependent on them, that we celebrate it, that they're held accountable to, truly held accountable to it, and that culturally it becomes important, which is just going to take time. You have volunteer positions that kids can engage with on a weekly basis
yeah.
and really help them grow.
So that's great. Important, dependent, celebrated, accountable, and cultural. I want to just unpack a couple of those
okay.
real quick.
Yeah.
The one that stands out to me, and I'm sure, I bet you there's people driving in their cars listening to this going, how do I fire a volunteer? Your point four was accountable.
Right.
You know, there's churches that have, 200 people who
right.
Only have 5 volunteers. How are they going to, how are they going to fire a volunteer, and right. B, how do they go about doing that?
Yeah, it's tough. It's really tough. It never goes well
yeah.
because basically what you're saying is, hey, I realize you want to do this for free, but no, thank you. I mean, yeah. it's never going to be easy. And so, one thing I would remember is this is not the HR department, and you don't necessarily need a list of things. And a lot of times I say to folks, sometimes the easiest way to do it is just to tell them that it's my decision and I've chosen not to.
Mm.
So for instance, in our world, we had groups directors who were in charge of the small group leaders. And so the best time to fire somebody is to never hire them.
Mm-hmm.
So you should have a really good interview process.
Yeah.
And with the goal of firing as few people as possible.
Yeah.
And then once you get there, there are just times you've got to ask a volunteer to stop serving. And I think the best way to do that is to say, you know what? It is my job to decide, and I've decided not to.
Mm.
As opposed to, you're just too weird, or, you're too legalistic, or, I mean, there's 100 reasons. Or one is, you hate so many people on social media that you're too busy making a point instead of a difference. Like, you're leveraging your influence with half of your kids' parents over those things.
Mm.
And if you can't get a volunteer to understand that, then they're not prioritizing the relationship with the kid
yeah.
and really the stewardship that God's put them in.
Yeah.
So those are a lot of reasons. And a lot of times people just don't understand. And
yeah.
so when you say it's my decision and I say no, you can also say, I realize you might disagree.
Yeah.
But it's my decision and it's final.
Yeah. Is there a way to do this where you're not blindsiding them?
I think so. I mean, I think you should have ongoing conversations.
And yeah, that's what I was getting to.
Some people can't be they just always blindsided. I'm amazed sometimes. I'm always like, how? I mean, this is out of the blue. I'm like, out of the blue, we have had 10 conversations about this.
Welcome to student ministry.
Yeah, Well, whether it was that or, you know, when I was a high school principal, you know, just teachers that we would let go, it was like, I can't believe you think it's a surprise.
But this, I guess that goes to your point five, right? If this is a cultural thing,
right,
then they're hearing this when they're in the middle of it and the expectation is set long in advance.
Right. Well, I mean, again, if it's a cultural thing and you've been at it for years and you've raised the bar, the good news is when you've fired some people over time, you actually have to do it less and less because culture starts to drive the expectation.
Yeah,
you don't have to.
That's good.
That's hard work.
Yeah.
And cultural work is so hard. Because you don't see culture change.
Yeah.
And so you're just doing what you think is right and you're doing, you're just hoping it's right, hoping it's right. And one day, hopefully, you just realize the culture's changed because it has, but it's so hard to see happening.
Yeah. There's a great biblical example of this, I think. You know, in Genesis, it says that after receiving some land, Abraham planted an oak tree.
Yeah.
And it's a weird thing, but biblical scholars will tell you that the oak tree is the slowest growing tree in the Middle East.
Yeah.
And so he wasn't planting the tree for himself. He was planting it for his descendants. And what you're talking about seems like when you start to change culture, you might not be changing it for you. You're changing it for the person who's going to replace you.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
And since we're talking about culture, I'm assuming your point three, celebrate.
Right.
Is a huge shapeshifter when it comes to culture, right?
It does. Yeah. It does. You know, the celebrating what you want repeated is a huge and important part of leadership. But the danger of it is you're celebrating a highlight reel, right? So as a leader, though you should celebrate it, you can't let that highlight reel define your ministry.
Yeah.
You've got to define your ministry by the worst experience of the kids in your ministry. So think about the kids in their worst group, and that's how you have to measure your ministry, and you have to go to work there.
Yeah.
However, the whole time celebrating what's happening at the top end of your ministry because you're casting vision for those folks. So it is a huge culture builder. But I think the mistake I see often is, you know, you look at the great things that are happening in a ministry and you're like, oh, aren't I doing a great job? Mm. And you're like, well, that's a great leader who's doing great things, and they would be doing that whether you were here or not, right?
Yeah.
Because what we do is important. Great people are going to show up and spend time.
Yeah.
So especially in youth ministry and children's ministry, like, we have got to be careful not to define our own success by that. However, celebrate, celebrate, celebrate. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So I want us to pretend for a moment.
Okay.
Pretend that I'm having coffee with you and I say to you, hey, I'm the student minister of a church that's 500 strong.
Okay.
We have about 80 kids who are in middle school and I oversee middle school.
Right.
I agree with all of five of these things. What's the thing I should do tomorrow? What's the thing that I should start with? Where's my starting line here?
Right. Well, I think it's more leaders, better leaders. That's the battle cry. And it will be your battle cry.
Mm.
More leaders, better leaders. So start with a list of people you know would be great.
Mm-hmm.
Being small group leaders in your ministry and engage with them,
mm-hmm.
and then help them really to help kids begin to mobilize and get them to serve.
Yeah, because I see you having all this success, and I'm lucky and fortunate enough to be the beneficiary of this. My daughters went through middle school when you're in charge.
Yeah.
And, you know, all three of my girls now serve in some capacity. My eldest serves in Wumberland, middle
with the babies.
With the babies.
Yeah.
Sorry, I should explain that.
Yeah,
Wumberland is our infants ministry at North Point, where I work. My youngest daughter does that as well, and my middle daughter serves in production.
Yeah.
So you've somehow ingrained all of that into them.
Well, I think when you have high school kids serving alongside them, I mean, this is another, maybe I need to add this to this sixth dot, right? I guess maybe this is the cultural thing.
Yeah.
When you see kids 2 years, 3 years in front of you doing serving, you just assume that's what you're supposed to do, and you start to aspire to get to do that someday. Mm-hmm. You have kids who are, they have a paper chain counting down when they get to serve, not have to serve.
Yeah.
And that's when you know culture is really shifting. So,
and this is probably one of the things I would love. I mean, I'm going to assume that some people who are listening to this don't know who you are, okay, and don't know what you've achieved. But one of the things that I know, and correct me wherever
have I achieved anything?
You have. And, but correct me wherever I've gone wrong here. What you did at North Point was you have created a culture where not only do you have middle school students being led by high school students, college, and older. Right. Usually each small group has three leaders, right?
Two adults and a high school student in middle school, right.
Which is incredible. But they also sign up for a number of years.
Yes. Yeah.
So people who are hearing that are like, whoa, hang on, I can't get people to sign up for more than 6 months. Like, right. How do you... Chef, this is a question for me personally. Like, yeah. How did you do that?
Well, I mean, to be fair, that's what the culture was doing when I got there.
Yeah.
But I do get this question all the time, followed by my people will never do that or our people will never do that. And I would say your people have never been asked to. Because, I mean, the reason I ask volunteers to serve every Sunday and for a season, whether it be 3 years or in middle school or 4 years with high school, younger... you can actually go shorter.
Yeah,
is because that's what it takes. That's what it takes for it takes a kid a year to trust you, and then you've got a couple years of, you know, having this safe place for kids to serve and or kids to really work out their faith.
And that seems to me to fall into all of those categories because you're asking them to do something important.
Yeah,
and the longevity of it is important, right? You're asking them to be dependent.
Yep,
you're asking them. For accountability.
Yeah.
And along the way, you're celebrating them.
Right.
And that hand in hand creates the culture.
Well, you know, boot camp, our sixth grade camp.
Yeah.
If you can't go to boot camp, you can't be a leader.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting?
How does that get received by people?
Very well, actually. Yeah. I mean, you've got to remember, again, the orientation part we talked about, the best time to fire is to never hire.
Yeah.
You should have a really hard orientation and you should be clear about the expectation. You should cast vision, but not water down the responsibility side of it. The right people, they love that. The right people want to be in charge. We get asked all the time, how do we get men to serve? How do we get men to serve? Like, you know, and it was, it's interesting because like, for instance, I have several CFOs and CEOs that come and serve with middle school boys.
Yeah.
And you cast vision.
Yeah.
You don't say you need, you say replace every need with a get to, you know? Sort of a thing. And then when it becomes part of culture, those guys and those ladies are talking to their kids about the importance of serving as they get older as well.
We started this conversation with you saying that it's all about discipleship.
Yeah.
Service opportunities is discipleship.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, and I'm sure there are smart people listening to this podcast now who've already picked this up.
Right.
Because we've been talking for the last couple of minutes about the leaders, not about the kids.
Right.
But the leaders are the ones who are modeling the service to the kids on a weekly basis, which really is the definition of discipleship.
Isn't it interesting? Well, you know, I'm thinking through, I have a guy named Skip who I don't anymore. I'm no longer at North Point. I'm at Orange. He's the director of student strategy. But the guy, his name is Skip, and he played in the NFL. He went to boot camp.
Yeah.
And he is an empty nester. So he's into his 60s and he shows up to serve with these middle school boys. And after boot camp, he came to me and he said, "Chef, I have played and I have been on the biggest stages in this world when it comes to, you know, what's supposed to be fulfilling. And none of that compares to what I felt this weekend."
Wow.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
When I felt the weight of what God has placed on my shoulders. His heart came alive. He didn't get... So he's the right guy, right?
Yeah.
And here he is, an empty nester. And, you know, people are like, am I too old for student ministry? No. Like, students are drawn to the oldest... This is a Duffy Robbins quote. The oldest person in the room that takes them seriously. So if you are, you know, older and wondering if you can, the answer is yes, you can. And you can create a safe place for kids. You can give them that stability. You can be that adult that's not their parent that they can go to. You can be that one cell phone number that they can call in the middle of the night. It's so important.
Can you say that quote one more time?
Oh, Duffy's
quote. Because I'm trying to write it down here.
Yeah, yeah. Students are drawn to the oldest person in the room who takes them seriously.
Who takes them seriously.
I'm jumping in here. I don't do this all the time.
This is our producer, Kevin.
Talking about what we're supposed to be talking about. That's what he's saying.
I actually just want to echo that. My mom was a volunteer youth ministry leader at our church.
Yeah.
And I never said that phrase to people really until recently. Not because I was ashamed. I just never put it together. Working at Orange on the marketing team, I've had a chance to kind of see it up close and personal and really connect and say, wow, that's what my mom did. And but more importantly, I mean, I'm getting emotional about it because I can literally see the adults in my head.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, whoa. I never thought about why I was drawn to those adults. I mean, it's almost like you gave language something that's been.
Duffy gave you.
It's huge. I mean,
I got it from Scott Rubin and quoted him. He's like, "That's not my quote."
Man, it's moving because I literally think about the most impactful adults in my life.
Yeah.
And my parents divorced when I was 7, and I just think about like how the people showed up in my world.
Right.
And I mean, it feels serendipitous, but when I think about this, like that was it. They saw something in me, and it took me seriously enough.
Mm.
I just leaned into that so much, and man, that's a powerful phrase and it's a powerful quote. But more than anything, it's just true.
Yeah. You know, I ironically, because we're talking about how it's more than missions, right? I was on a mission trip in Israel just this past summer, and somebody said something to me which for me meant the world. He said, "The best olive oil comes from the oldest trees."
Oh, wow.
And I think this dovetails into what you're saying here.
Yeah.
You're not too old to do this because, and again, this just for me, gosh, Chef, as I hear you talking, I just see this circle back because we're talking about getting students activated into serving, right?
Right.
That's what we want. But they do that when they see it modeled and they see it modeled by people they respect, when they see it modeled week after week after week after week.
You know, one thing that I changed my tune on near the end of my career at North Point was we used to say, you know, serving in middle school is hard. You get through a 3-year tour of duty, we would call it, just the way we talked about it. You should take a year off. And I've changed my tune completely that. I'm like, you are created to serve. Like, hey, if this is where your heart comes alive, then re-up and go again. Now, we have to be wise about, you know, hey, this next group is not going to look anything like the last group because I know you have these expectations now that you've felt it. But why would you take a break from the thing that gives you life?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I love that the answer to this question, how do we mobilize students, is by mobilizing adults.
I think that's where you brought us. Yeah.
That's pretty cool, dude.
That is cool. Well done.
That's discipleship.
Australians.
Well, not too bad, right? Lord. Hey, Chef, thank you so much. I know you got a flight to get to. I don't want to let you out. And we've got to figure out a way to get out of this Hulkbuster thing.
It's a little warm in here, too.
it is a little bit warm in here. Thank you so much. We're going to put all of your information in the show notes and where they can get all these. We'll find out where these quotes come from and all that sort of stuff, too.
And the student ministry folks, I would love you to listen to a new podcast we have called Rethinking Youth Ministry Podcast. It's rethinkingym.org. You can find out information there. You can find it on iTunes. But we're just really trying to give you a weekly conversation. I know it can be lonely out there as a youth pastor, and we just want to hang out with you once a week and talk about the things you love, and I hope you come check it out.
Yeah, what I love is with this Think Orange podcast, we get to have these overarching conversations and these stories and these ideas, but you really go into very specific on your podcast. So
yeah, and a little bit controversial too, so that's fun.
Oof.
Yeah,
I'm going to start listening just for the controversy. we'll include that in the show notes as well. Chef, thanks again, man.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
Well, I was taking lots of notes on this one as I was listening to James and Chef drop a lot of knowledge and a lot of wisdom about what we can do to make sure we utilize our resources in a transformational way. And one thing that really stood out to me about what James had to say was really how he highlighted the idea from that book, Toxic Charity, which I actually am compelled to read now. When he talks about what happens when we get into this cycle of compassion and action and how it often leads us to actually not solve the problems that need to be solved. I mean, if I can be honest with you all for one moment, as a dad of a toddler, my daughter's almost 2 years old now, and it's very easy for me to jump in and say, Arden is crying, let me help her just stop crying, or let me just give her this thing that's going to pacify her. Well, let's look at the pacifier as a literal analogy, right? I mean, my daughter Arden cries, and I can say, well, I'm moved because for compassion because she's crying, and I want to move and act to help her in that way. So I give her a pacifier to self-soothe and work through that moment. And every time she cries, I do the exact same thing, but I'm creating a new problem, and it's called teeth that are going to be misaligned. And so that's going to lead to braces down the road, which could lead to teasing at school and all other issues that I could possibly avoid if I would just not stop at where I'm feeling most moved by compassion and said, let me start to figure out what the need is. Is she hungry? Is she hurt? So that kind of thing hits me really hard on just a surface level as a dad, but also as a husband. I mean, I'm not going to go into much detail, but on this one, just because I think we can all relate to this pretty easily. But the idea that there's times when we all just jump in, even with our spouses, and we try to solve problems based on what was moving us from a compassion perspective, but we have not taken enough time to listen and discover the real issue to see how we can appropriately serve our spouse. Well, because we understand this on a personal level, that's what's happening on a macro level when our church goes out and does missions globally or outreach locally, and we have not taken the time to develop a relationship with the people that we are serving, and at least it was actually having some collateral damage in the process through us just trying to do the work of God and trying to mean the hands and feet of God. And I think that's a big part of what I took away from everything James said is, I wrote down for myself actually, empathy in all caps. Just like, Kevin, you have to make sure you can't serve someone if you don't know them. And I think that's just really convicting for me today. And I hope that that got to you as well. And then one thing that Chef said that really hit hard as well was just the idea that at the end of the day, service is discipleship. Right, that at the end of the day, this is the opportunity for us to become and have the next generation become disciples and followers of Jesus by how we serve others. Well, right now, we are days away from Thanksgiving, and we're in a season many churches, people, our country are all thinking about how we serve other people. And I think there's no better time to talk about how we can do this in a way that's transformational. And it starts with us getting to know those that we want to serve. And so I would just want to challenge anyone who's listening right now to think about, what can I do this season, not to just serve and deliver food to someone who's hungry or a gift to a kid in need, but what can I do to enter into their world and let them know that they have a person who wants to get to know them as well. So I challenge all of us to think about something we can do this time that'd be different to make sure we build a relationship or at least open up a door for ongoing conversation with the person that we serve this year, as opposed to it being a simple exchange where we give them something great, provide value to them, and go back into our world and leave them where they are. Well, thank you again for listening to the Think Orange podcast. As always, we'd love for you to subscribe to this podcast if you're enjoying it. Have it delivered to you. You can find it on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, or SoundCloud. You can also leave us a rating or review. You would be surprised how much that matters for us to make sure, first of all, that we can actually make the podcast better. I just encourage you to listen to the people that you serve, and we want to listen to you because we are doing this to serve you. So please tell us how we can make this better for you. But it's also how we can make sure other people find this podcast. iTunes is always going to present the podcast that has the best ratings to people. So if you've enjoyed this, you taking the 2 minutes it takes to just give us a star rating, hopefully high if we're doing a great job, and a few words of encouragement or a few words of feedback can go a long way, and we really appreciate that. Third, we do our best to acknowledge the fact that you are probably listening to this on the go. So to make sure you don't have to crash trying to take a note or remember the name of a book, we do all that for you on thinkorangepodcast.com, where you can find summaries of every single episode in the form of show notes, what we call them. So we have timestamps, so you can jump back to that section if you remember exactly where you were when you heard that idea or that particular story. We have great conversation starters that you can use to either reflect personally or even go back to your team and start that conversation about what it would mean to mobilize resources in a transformational way. So we have some prompts you can use, as well as some great quotes that you can just kind of put in your back pocket to reference back to in the future. So please go to thinkorangepodcast.com, and we always have a summary for you on any episode that we've put out thus far. And lastly, share this with your team. Share this with other friends in ministry. we would love to make sure we do our part to take this information, take this content that people are sharing in all these events and these great conversations we're having with leaders, and make sure that they're in the hands of as many people as we can. Because as Dave Adamson always says, numbers matter because people count. And I think that's a really big deal. So for us, putting this podcast in the hands of more leaders means that there are more kids, more students that are being impacted on the other end of this. And so please help us move that forward as well. So from Dave, Ashley, and the entire Think Orange podcast team, we want to wish you a happy Thanksgiving. And we hope that you stay safe as you travel and as you avoid those crazy, wild Black Friday crowds. And as always, when you think next generation, think orange.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Think Orange podcast.
Join us next time for more ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation.
For more episodes and show notes, visit thinkorangepodcast.com.